When fans of Sábado Gigante bid it farewell on September 19th, it'll be the last time that Don Francisco asks his classic catchphrase question, "What does the public want?"
¿Qué dice el público?
And they've always known the answer. Don Francisco, that is Mario Kreutzberger, now 74, is a child of refugees. His German-Jewish parents fled the Holocaust to Chile, where Mario was born. He started hosting the show when he was 21, but he has been playing Don Francisco for even longer.
Don Francisco is born as an impression of a Jewish guy that couldn't speak well in Spanish because he was immigrated from Russia, from Poland. I did that impression every Friday night in Maccabi Club.
At the Maccabi Club?
Yes. In Santiago, Chile, I was 16 years old when I started with that impression. That impression was a little from my father. My father couldn't speak well Spanish. I don't speak well English either, but I did the impression from a gentleman that was a friend of my father, and also he was one of the top executives from the Maccabi Club.
Why did you start this character when you were 16?
Well, that story is a little long. When I was 15, I was badly beaten by other students because I was different, you know. My parents were immigrating to Chile very close to the end of the war. Chile at that time, they were separated half and half. Half with the Allies in the United States and half with the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
That group of boys, they beat me because I don't know really what was going on. And I was a very shy boy. I cried a little when I went back home. I cleaned my knees with a little blood because they pushed me, they threw me. Next day, I went not to the school. I went to go around the square, and I did the same thing for 1 week. I went back to school with a different mentality. But I fight, and I won. 6 months after, I was the president of the class, and the next year, I was the president of the whole school. At the same time, I went into the Maccabi, and then I started doing that impression in front of a small audience, and then a bigger audience. We were about 2,000 people each Friday night.
Wow. Your mother was an aspiring opera singer, I understand. Your father was a tailor.
Yes, well, my father was an entrepreneur. He was not really a tailor. He learned in a book how to be a tailor. But he wanted me to be more than a tailor, a men's clothing designer. And my mother, she was very depressed because she couldn't perform in Germany the last years. And then in Chile, I was born.
Your father wanted you to be a men's clothing designer?
That's right.
And you wound up in New York.
In 1959.
Tell me how that led to Sábado Gigante.
Well, that changed my life. The hotel's still there, Hotel Stanford on 32nd and Broadway. When I went into that room, I saw a radio, but instead of having a piece of cloth in front, that radio had a glass. And when I put it on and I saw that that radio was able to listen and watch at the same time, I was impressed.
That was your first contact with television.
That's right. I was so amazed about that, that I was watching 3, 4, 5 hours every day, taking notes about everything that I was seeing. Steve Allen, Art Linkletter, Ed Sullivan, Johnny Carson. When I went back to Chile, the World Soccer Cup in 1962 brought the television to Chile. Then I went to the station. I said, you know, I know more television than everybody here because I was watching for 2 years. At that time, the television was airing programs from Sunday to Friday. Saturday was the day to clean the equipments. Yeah, the general manager said, we're going to open the television on Saturday only for you 1 hour. Then they gave me 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. During 20 years, I had 8 hours live on Saturday.
How do you have an 8-hour television show?
I had 1 hour for kid, 1 hour for young people, 1 hour for young couples. You know, I had different hours. An American fellow told me, Sábado Gigante is like a soup. You can change some of the ingredients, but the basic flavor is always there.
Production moved to Miami in 1986. How did you have to adjust it for an American TV audience?
This was also the beginning in the United States of the Hispanic television. I came up with a tagline that said, separated by distance, but united by our language. How I came up with this? My wife was sick at the hospital. When I went the next day to visit her, in the front of the bed was a chart, and they put white, Hispanic, Jewish, female. And I said to myself, here everybody has a tag.
That's not true in Chile?
I think all over the world we have a tag, but not so specific like here.
So you were reaching across the U.S. and across Latin America into South America to find common ground.
Well, first, I start as a co-host only for Miami, for mostly a Cuban audience. Then after 1 year, I was told that we're going to be a national show. And we adapt the program to foreigners that lived in the United States and they speak Spanish.
We spoke to Carolina Miranda of the LA Times about the show. She thought the earliest version in Chile, she loved it, but she felt that as time went on, the outfits for the models got more and more revealing, the skits became more caricatured of lower class people, that the show became more crass.
That's an opinion. But on the other hand, I give you the response of the audience, because the audience is changing too.
Mm-hmm.
When I start, we had only two networks in Chile. When I start here, there was only two companies in Spanish, small companies, Univision and Telemundo. Today, you have all the programming from South America, Central America, you can see from your own country. Then you have to fight the audience in a different way.
It seems that there are all these contradictions in the show. You do serious educational segments, then you have a bikini contest. You've been honored by the gay rights group GLAAD for some groundbreaking interviews, but you also have skits featuring pretty extreme gay stereotypes. What do you think the viewer should take away?
Well, there is nothing that you can do in this world that doesn't have a critic. I have big, big respect for the audience. I can tell you, my soul, my feelings, I do the best what I can. I think we're still doing a family program for our audience.
Even if the program has women sometimes in thong bikinis and you and the audience are commenting basically on their tushies?
Yes. Each group of people, we are different. Maybe that is for you very aggressive. Maybe it's not so aggressive for us. But I'm not trying to do something aggressive. We believe in the beauty of women.
There was a detail that was mentioned in profiles of you, that you were accused of sexual harassment by a former model on the show in the early 1990s. You settled out of court. Did that have any impact on the way that you or your producers thought about portraying women on the show?
I can give you only one answer. If you have a popularity, many people, they try to damage you to get money. I have worked maybe with 200 models, then you have to ask the other 199 models.
And it didn't have any impact on how you portrayed women?
Not at all. Not at all.
How close are you to your character? What's the difference between Don Francisco and Mario Kreutzberger?
You know, when we start, we were almost the same. But today, I'm the one that is giving the fuel to Don Francisco. A host doesn't sweat, doesn't have family problems, doesn't have health problems. It's a happy guy every day. But the guy who gives the fuel has 75 years almost.
So what happens to Don Francisco? You'll continue to work with Univision.
Yeah, I'm still being under contract with Univision. Don Francisco's still alive. I did not only Sábado Gigante here, I had also a talk show for 15 years. In my home country, I do political interviews, game shows like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and maybe that's the future here also.
Will you know who you are if Don Francisco ceases to be?
Well, I have to tell you, I was scared, and I'm scared every day. This is not an easy job. It's not an easy passion. Uniting the family in front of the TV set. I was always thinking that Sábado Gigante was good company for the family. And I'm still believing that today.
What do you think of Stephen Colbert's impersonation?
He's very funny.
You're okay with it?
I'm complete okay. I do impressions from other people. Why? I don't accept impressions from myself.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the interview. You have to understand this is my third language.
Mazel tov.
Thank you, thank you. Same to you.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, and Sam Dingman. The wonderful Maya Brownstein leaves us this week. Thank you for all your help, Maya, and good luck with the move to Boston. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Joe Plourd.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.